Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson, and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 798 for release on Sunday, June 9th, 2024. On WaveScan today, part two of our report on Iceland. And we'll have the final part of our interview with Wolf Harent in Vienna at DocuFunk, as well as our DX report from the Philippines. Well, just over a year ago in May last year, 2023, we brought you a feature on longwave radio in Iceland. That was intended to be the first of a two-part series, but we never got around to bringing you part two. So here with a recap, an update, and the rest of the story is Ray Robinson at the Voice of Hope in Los Angeles.
Thanks, Jeff. As we reported last year, Iceland is a very rugged country in the North Atlantic, just below the Arctic Circle. It actually contains some 36 islands, most of them quite small, although the main one's about 300 miles long east-west and 200 miles wide north-south, and with a coastline of over 3,000 miles due to the many deep fiords and inlets. It's one of the least densely populated countries in the world, and still today only has a population of just less than 400,000 residents. The country is about the same size physically as the US state of Kentucky, but with less than one-tenth of the population. About 60% of Icelanders live in and around the capital area of Reykjavik. The remainder of the population is mostly clustered in fishing villages around the coasts, and a few are engaged in herding and grazing. With no arable land and an inhospitable climate, there's no agriculture at all in the country. The centre of the main island of Iceland has a number of volcanic peaks that rise to about 7,000 feet, surrounded by a huge central plateau that accounts for more than half the land area, with ice fields that are both uninhabited and uninhabitable. The language of Iceland is Icelandic, which has evolved surprisingly little over the centuries from the Old Norse spoken in Norway by their Viking ancestors more than 1,000 years ago. Formerly a part of the Kingdom of Denmark, like Greenland and the Faroe Islands, Iceland gained full independence from Denmark in 1918. Radio broadcasting first came to Iceland in 1926, and in 1930 the Icelandic State Broadcasting Service, known as the RUV, pronounced RUV, was established. From then until 1984, RUV enjoyed a legally enforced monopoly on all broadcasting in Iceland, both radio and TV, and all programming was exclusively in Icelandic. There are no railroads in Iceland, and in the wintertime many roads to remote towns and villages become impassable, so radio communication remains extremely important in Icelandic culture. RÚV has a long tradition of using longwave radio to try to cover the entire population, because medium wave frequencies were often subject to interference at night from stations which crowded the band in Europe. The capital, Reykjavik, is situated towards the southern end of a large bay on the west coast of Iceland, and in 1930 a longwave transmitter on 271 kHz was set up right on the edge of the city in a place called Vatnsendi. Initially this had low power, but in 1949 it was replaced with a 100 kilowatt unit operating on 209 kHz, which was adjusted in 1978 to 207 kHz to comply with the new Eastern Hemisphere 9 kHz spacing band plan. At the northern end of the bay, there's a 30-mile long peninsula that juts westward into the Atlantic Ocean, and in 1997, the main longwave transmission site was moved from Vatnsendi to a new location at the extreme western end of that peninsula, at a place called Helisandr. The antenna mast there, which was first constructed for other purposes in 1963, is 1,352 feet high, one of the tallest structures in Western Europe. The new transmitter began operating on 189 kHz with an output power of 300 kilowatts to cover Reykjavik and the entire mainland west of the Central Highland Plateau, basically the western half of the country. The original pair of masts at Vatnsendi, which were erected in 1930, were finally toppled by explosives in August 2021. In 1938, a secondary transmitter was located in the east at Idar. Initially, this operated on 615 kHz medium wave with just 1 kilowatt. In the early 1950s, it was replaced with a 5 kilowatt unit, and then in 1965, it was converted to long wave, transmitting with 20 kilowatts on 209 kHz, later adjusted to 207 kHz. In 1998, the antenna mast was reconstructed to a height of 720 feet, and the transmitter was replaced with a new 100 kilowatt unit to cover all the eastern fishing villages until its closure last year. The two frequencies of 189 in the west and 207 in the east basically sandwiched BBC Radio 4 on 198 kHz, which was consistently heard at night in Iceland, especially in the south and east. But transmissions on 207 kHz ended on January the 27th, 2023, and the mast itself was also demolished on March the 2nd, just over 1 year ago. As of now, the transmitter on 189 kHz is still carrying a mixture of ROOV channels 1 and 2. Its stated purpose is to cover the areas between towns and villages where FM signals don't reach, to provide a service to the many people engaged in the Icelandic fishing fleet at sea, and to provide a backup for emergency communications purposes. However, most vehicles sold these days don't come equipped with radios that can tune long-wave frequencies, so most people travelling between towns and villages can't listen to the station on long-wave anyway. The transmitter's effectiveness is thus very much in question, and it just may not be viable to continue funding its operation for such a small population beyond the end of this year. ROOV did operate a few medium-wave transmitters to fill in areas not well covered by either long-wave signal. There was a 1 kilowatt transmitter on 666 kHz at Herfen on the southeast coast, and a 5 kilowatt transmitter on 738 kHz at Skjaldavik on the central north coast, but both were closed on April the 20th, 1999. A string of other very low power, like 20 watt transmitters on 1413, 1485 and 1511 kHz were also closed on various dates in the 1990s and early 2000s. The transmitter at Herfen on 666 kHz was reactivated briefly for test purposes in 2016 and 2017, but it hasn't been reported recently. In the early years of ROOV, a short-lived external service was operated on shortwave, but this had to be abandoned due to budget cuts. In the 70s and 80s, however, they did broadcast a portion of their home service on shortwave for the benefit of their fishing fleet, which was often out of range of the longwave signal when they were over in the North Sea fishing for cod. They chose an interesting frequency, 12.175 kHz upper sideband, because that was the frequency used by their fishermen for point-to-point communications. The shortwave station, located at Reykjavik, used the call sign TFJ and operated with an output power of 7 kilowatts. From 1973 until January 2007, two 10-kilowatt Collins shortwave transmitters were also used with two directional rhombic antennas to beam relays of domestic news programmes to Scandinavia, Great Britain and continental Europe on frequencies in the 90, 31 and 22 metre bands, and to Canada and the USA in the 41, 25 and 19 metre bands, although all programming was in Icelandic. Reception was often reported from Europe, the United States and South Africa, and one audio tape was even received from Australia. All accurate reports were QSL'd. The Broadcasting Act of 1985 rescinded the ROOV monopoly on broadcasting and made provision for licenses to be granted to privately owned FM and TV stations. ROOV is required to continue operating two radio channels and one TV channel, all partially supported by advertising. Through a combination of FM and longwave transmission, ROOV had accomplished 99% coverage of the country, although that is now somewhat less since the 207 kHz transmitter was closed. Initially, most private FM stations operated in and around the capital city area, where a majority of the population resides. These days, there are five privately owned national FM networks, plus a dozen or more individual stations and several dozen low-power community stations. There's also a 5-kilowatt relay of the BBC World Service on 94.5 MHz FM. During the Second World War, Iceland was initially a neutral country, but in the spring of 1940, a small force of British troops arrived to protect the island and to deny the Nazis the possibility of using it as a base for U-boat attacks on North Atlantic shipping convoys. While there, the British took control of all radio communications and built a new broadcast studio complex in the centre of Reykjavik, which is still in use to this day. The following year, the British asked the United States if they'd take over protection duties so as to free the British troops for service elsewhere, and they did so right up until 1945. Iceland then joined NATO in 1949, and in 1951 entered into a formal defence agreement with the United States. To the south of Reykjavik, there's another peninsula that juts westward into the Atlantic Ocean, the Grindavik Peninsula. This has been much in the news of late due to volcanic eruptions that have encroached on the town of Grindavik itself, on the south side of the peninsula. Well, on the north side of that same peninsula, just a few miles north of Grindavik, sits another town whose name may be familiar, Keflavik. From 1951 until 2006, Keflavik was the site of a major US airbase and naval station. When the base was established, a US Armed Forces radio station was also set up on 1530 kHz AM, which in spite of its modest power level of 250 watts, in later years identified as Thunder 1530. In the 1990s, a second transmitter on 104 FM was added, which identified as Power 104. These transmitters were easily heard across the water in Reykjavik, though, where they were collectively known colloquially as Yankee Radio. But early in 2006, under George W. Bush's administration, the US decided to withdraw its forces from the military base at Keflavik in a move that was characterized in Iceland as a unilateral cancellation of the US-Icelandic defense agreement. AFRTS, Thunder 1530 and Power 104 signed off for the last time on Saturday, June 1, 2006, the former after 55 years of continuous broadcasting. At the time of the station's closure, RÚV reported that they'd greatly increased the amount of American music available to Icelandic audiences and deeply influenced the music, fashion and attitudes of Icelandic youth. The airbase is now operated as Keflavik International Airport, the only airport in Iceland with immigration facilities for international flights. The smaller airport at Reykjavik is now used for domestic flights only. RÚV does provide a daily news service in English on the internet, which you can find at ruv.is/English.
This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
It's RÚV English Radio. Hello, I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today.
Thanks, Ray. This coming Friday, June 14th, will be the 30th anniversary of WRMI. 30 years since we first went on the air with a regular broadcast schedule from Miami on Tuesday, the 14th of June, 1994. Next week, Ray will be looking at those events 30 years ago. Well, for the past 6 weeks, we've been airing a fascinating interview that Jonathan Marks of Media Network Vintage Vault did with Wolf Harant at the DocuFunk facility in Vienna, Austria, which stores hundreds of thousands of QSL cards, audio recordings, and other documentation of shortwave and amateur radio stations around the world. Today, we have the final portion of that story.
We do not collect hardware with a few exceptions. This, for instance, is a run-of-the-mill communications receiver of the 60s, 70s. The chap who owned this worked 1,500 awards, the most difficult ones. Others have huge equipment, and they don't manage to get all these things he did with that simple transceiver.
And the Frog 7 was indeed a...
It was a good one.
Incredible for its
day. Yeah, for its days.
Wadley loops and all that.
Yeah. this is just stuff to go to the storerooms. Fortunately, this has been done. Yeah.
Sitting on the shelf, yes.
Yeah. When we were talking about radios, if you had a radio like this one, you never knew whether you are on 6155 or on 62 or whatever it is. Bali Wadley from South Africa were the first ones to give you a kilohertz
accuracy.
Yeah. I think we have a yes, there you are. This Trio 1000. Yes. You started at, say, 8 o'clock, and it had to warm up until 10.
Otherwise it wasn't stable.
It wasn't stable enough, and you kept lists, and you knew that if you put this here and here, somewhere here, there might be an exotic station. And you stayed up all night, and, you know, you heard a radio station, music. You even identified a piece of music. It was Spanish. Therefore, probably it was Venezuela or something like that. So you consulted your very first books, and it said, this could be Radio Juventud. It could be Radio Faro del Caribe. What strikes me most is when listening to one of those programs, not only ours, but all these shows, that it took 40, 50, 60 hours, a whole week, to compile stuff for half an hour. And how we labored to get a station identification, recorded it night after night after night, and played back 7 or 8 seconds. What a wealth of information we have. We're keeping files of the development of amateur radio and international broadcasting on a daily basis for the past 15 years here at the archives. This is just files, events, but we can back them up with all the tapes and recordings of all the colleagues that did media shows. If someone just goes mouse-clicking through our files, you will find an audio for almost everything that happened in the past 20, 30, 40 years. It's an incredible wealth of information that you wouldn't find anywhere else. That's what we're really proud of.
It's actually amazing, too, that the public service broadcasters are the only broadcasters in the world that are also given the, in some cases, the funds to build the electronic heritage of the country.
Long live public broadcasting. Long live private commercial radio. But let them live side by side as equal partners. I've come up from a kind of funny psychological background. I don't think in quota. Quota is what you have had last week and what you have this week. Psychologists think in generations. If a generation of if young people don't learn to use the media as part of their life, if they are satisfied with a soundbite of 30 seconds as news for news, they will grow up and they won't be able to teach their children to listen to the radio.
And that was the late Wolf Harent speaking with Jonathan Marks for his Media Network Vintage Vault website during a tour of DocuFunk in Vienna, Austria in 2009. Incidentally, Wolf, who hosted the German language DX program on Radio Austria International, was a professor and a friend of mine, and a friend of DXers for many years. He passed away in 2021, but his legacy lives on in the DocuFunk archives. Last week we mentioned the Pacific Wave program that can be heard on Radio New Zealand Pacific, but we didn't have time to give you the shortwave schedule of RNZ Pacific, so here it is now. You may want to get a pen and paper to jot this down. You can hear RNZ Pacific on the following shortwave schedule. Midnight to 0558 UTC daily on 17675 kHz. 0559 to 0858 UTC daily on 13690 kHz. 0859 to 1258 UTC Monday through Saturday on 9700 kHz. 1259 to 1650 UTC daily on 7440 kHz. 1651 to 1758 UTC Saturday on 9700 kHz. 1759 to 1958 UTC Saturday on 11725 kHz. And 1959 to 2358 UTC daily on 15720 kHz. Plus the following transmissions in the DRM mode, which are on daily except Saturday. 1651 to 1758 UTC on 7425 kHz. 1759 to 1858 UTC on 9655. And 1859 to 2058 UTC on 13840 kHz, those last transmissions in DRM. Now let's go to Henry Umatai in the Philippines with his DX report for June.
Hello everyone, to the dear shortwave listeners, wherever you're welcome to the June 9th edition of the Philippine DX. This is report number 207. I'm Henry Umatai in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental, Central Philippines. Glad to be back and thank you for listening. I would like to thank the following DXer for sending the reception report most recently: Mr. Richard Lemkin in Alberta, Canada, Mr. Eugene Cornican in Moscow, Russia, and Mr. Marco Lasatin in San Fernando, Pampanga, here in the Philippines. To all of you, thank you very much. Reception lags for May 2024. May 18, NHK Radio Japan and 17815 in Japanese from Yamata at 1224 SIO 555. May 18, BBC World Service on 9410 in English from Tinang at 1000 SIO 444. May 18, Radio Thailand World Service on 9285 in English from Odontani at 1210 SIO 555. May 18, Rich Bien Australia on 9580 in Korean from Kununura at 0937 SIO 444. May 25, China Radio International on 11955 in Filipino from Kunming Aning at 1221 SIO 444. And May 25, China Radio International on 11910 in Amoy from Beijing at 1222 SIO 555. Some reception information sent by our DXer friend Mark Lasatin from Pampanga here in the Philippines. He heard the following stations from his location. May 1, Voice of America on 17530 in Swahili from Penhera, Sao Tome at 1655 SAO 233. May 1, BBC World Service on 17780 in English from Ascension Island at 1700 SAO 222. And May 1, Voice of America on 17655 in Portuguese from Santa Maria de Galeria at 1721 SIO 222. Send us your comments, suggestions, reception logs, and informations to PilipinasDX@gmail.com. That's PILIPINASDX for PilipinasDX@gmail.com. This has been Henry Umatai for Wavescan in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental, Central Philippines. Ay mabuhay at maraming salamat po.
Thank you, Henry. And we end Wavescan today with folk music from Iceland. Thanks for listening to Wavescan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, we'll look at the 30th anniversary of WRMI and DX News as well. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.